Welcome back to another episode of Chalak, A Glimpse into Indian Classical Music. I hope that you're enjoying my episode so far. I'm extremely sorry for the break that I took. I was caught up in a lot of things, but I'm glad now that I'm back. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can voice record it on the Anchor podcast platform, and I'll be able to hear it and hopefully add it to my podcast. I'll have the link to the Anchor website in the description box of this episode. I hope you enjoy this episode of Chalak, and if you do, please don't forget to support the podcast through my Instagram account at chalak_ICM or by subscribing to my podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Before we move on to the content for today's podcast episode, let's do a quick recap of last week's episode. So last week, we discussed what classical music really is and how it was totally different to Bollywood. We also talked about the nine emotions, or the Navaras, of ICM and how it is still relevant today. And finally, I told you about the differences between Carnatic and Hindustani Shastriya Sangeet and a bit about their history. Well, today we're going to go a little bit deeper into that history. Today's episode is all about the very start of Indian classical music in the ancient times, which was around 4,500 years ago. There's a lot to get into this episode, so let's jump in. The Indus Valley Civilization, or Harappan Civilization, flourished around 2500 BC. They came down into India through places such as current-day Afghanistan. And research and evidence in this field has led archaeologists to believe the Indus Valley Civilization were quite a well-laid-out civilization that was functioning really well. However, due to unclear reasons, but it could be things like earthquakes, the Indus Valley Civilization disappeared by around 1500 BCE. What emerged from the downfall of the Indus Valley Civilization was the first official civilization of India, the Vedic Civilization. You see, it was during the collapse of the Indus Valley Civilization that the Indo-Aryans first entered India. They came just when the Indus Valley was beginning to decline. There could even be a possibility that the Indus Valley Civilization declined because of the entrance of the Aryans. But there is some cause to believe that the Indus Valley Civilization somehow merged with the Indo-Aryan Civilization, and that evolved to become the Vedic Civilization. But where does most of our knowledge come from? Thankfully, there were actually a lot of literary texts written in the Vedic times, making some parts of the Vedic lifestyle very accessible for researchers and historians today. One of the most notable and great literary works at the time were the Vedas. Now, some of you may already know or have heard of the Vedas. You may know that there are four different Vedas, all explaining and detailing different parts of the Vedic lifestyle. The oldest one, the Rig Veda, is written approximately between 1500 and 1200 BCE. The names of the other three Vedas are the Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, and Atharva Veda. They are said to be the very foundation of modern Indian culture and religion. Now, what's interesting about the Vedas is that none of these texts are composed by one single person at the time. Instead, they were crafted by multiple rishis or sages. Making changes to them was strictly forbidden. And it is because of this rule that there has been virtually zero changes made to the Vedas so far. So, as I mentioned before, each Veda specializes in a different topic. The Rig Veda specializes in the Hindu religion of the time, and it also discusses some philosophical aspects to the Hindu religion that are still present today. The Yajur Veda is a manual on religious offerings or yajñas. The Atharva Veda is filled with magical chants and incantations. Now, the Veda that we're particularly interested in is the Sama Veda. The Sama Veda was created after the Rig Veda and focuses a lot on the Vedic music of the time. Obviously, with the focus of the Vedic lifestyle being so largely centralized in the Hindu religion, there are obviously a lot of references to Hinduism as well over here. In the Sama Veda, we see hymns that were to be sung. To this date, it is the Veda that is still deeply connected to music in India. Let's look at the word Sama for a second. Now, all the Vedas were in Sanskrit. In fact, Vedas in Sanskrit means knowledge. Now, Sama is a composite term in Sanskrit, meaning it is made up of two words. These words are sa, which refers to the hymns that were sung, as well as ma, which refers to the musical notes. The people who wrote these hymns were called the Saptarishi, or the seven rishis. The Vedas kind of appear to them as revelations. While the hymns or riches that they created are in the Samaveda, a lot of the hymns they created were just on spot. They were completely improvised. This is super interesting to look at as it lays the foundation for Indian music in the future. One of the defining features of Indian music, especially ICM, is that it's largely improvised, and it's really cool to see that idea being generated such a long time ago. So you might be thinking that for these melodies to be sung, there needs to be some sort of notes or even a scale that they used. Well, there was. The first indication of the Indian scale is found in the Samaveda, but the note names were different to the ones that are used in ICM today. They're completely different. They have nothing to do at all with the Sa, Re, Ga, Ma, so on and so forth that we know today. The notes in the Vedic period were, and I'll try my best to pronounce them properly, Udat, Anudat, Svarita, Atisarga, Krushta, Prachay, and the culmination and blending of these notes is what created Vedic music, which was regularly performed during Vedic rituals. Vedic rituals were focused on yajna, or performing sacrifices in order to please the gods. The arts were defined as divine in Vedic literature, and art was commonly used in yajnas as it was thought that the music pleased the deities. Along with vocals, the veena was a very popular instrument used at the time. Other instruments at the time include the tunav, Dundubi, and Talav. Now, in Vedic music, there is a large focus on how knowledge is acquired, specifically the kind of dynamic between the teacher and the student, and how information was passed down from one generation to another. This was really key during the Vedic ages. The term that is most used to describe this focus is Guru Shishya Parampara. It is the ancient tradition involving both the disciple and the guru. The definition of Guru Shishya Parampara has undergone a lot of change since its beginning, and I will be talking more about that in the coming episodes. However, in its purest form when it was created, the guru is regarded as a parent figure for the disciple. In the Vedic times, the guru was ranked higher than the disciple's own biological parents. What would happen under traditional Guru Shishya Parampara is that the pupil, after a certain ceremony, also known as the initiation ceremony, would live in the house of his guru or teacher. There, the disciple studied the Vedas for at least 12 years. The way they did this was orally, by word of mouth. The guru was expected to pass on all their knowledge to the next generation in order to maintain accuracy of the Vedic verses and such. Later on, some kings also supported the Guru Shishya Parampara system, as they thought they were obligated to as part of their duties to be king. Now, in the Vedic times, there were different branches of learning, and they all were pertaining to different aspects in Vedic society that were important at the time. So, in total, there were 18 branches of Vedic learning, also known as Vidyasthanams, and they included deep study on astronomy and astrology, to the study of conduct and religious and legal duties. Shiksha, or the art of pronunciation, was one of the Vidyasthanams. Now, Shiksha is important because a minor difference in pronunciation could mean two entirely different words. However, due to the very improvised and slightly impulsive nature of the music, people often changed their pronunciations of these words. This meant that rules had to be established to make sure the correct message was being passed on. And this is where Shiksha literature comes in. It is one of the branches of Vedic learning, and it specializes in the correct pronunciation of vowels, consonants, and syllables. The six aspects that were dealt with in Shiksha literature were varna, or syllable, svar, or note, matra, or duration, bal, or articulation, sum, or balance, and santana, or the spacing between words. It's so mind-boggling to see just how intricate and exact all the art forms were at the time. This really goes to show that Indians taking their music seriously is a trait found all the way buried deep in our history. Music has always been a very important part of religion in India. In fact, there is a story of Rishi Narada and Lord Vishnu that shows just how close music was to religion and the philosophies of the Hindu lifestyle. So Rishi Narada was an educated sage in Hindu mythology. He knew a lot about music and was regarded as the most accomplished heavenly musician and singer on earth. Rishi Narada has often been criticized in Hindu mythology for being too vain and arrogant of his talent. For example, one day, Rishi Narada thought he had mastered all of the art and science of music. Lord Vishnu, seeing Rishi Narada's ignorance, took him to a building filled with men and women who were crying because their bones were broken. When asked who they were, they said they were the ragas which Narada, out of his ignorance, had distorted their features and broken their limbs. Narada, at hearing of this and his mistakes, bows down in front of Lord Vishnu and asks for forgiveness. The moral of this story not only shows us the importance of staying humble, but also shows us the deep connection between music and religion in the Vedic context. And that's all for today. Thank you so much once again for listening to this episode of Chalak. I hope that you found the Vedic ages interesting and were able to learn something new. If you want to learn more about the development of ICM, continue to like, share, and support my podcast episodes, and check back in a week or so for another one. Also, don't forget that if you have any suggestions at all, you can send me a voice message through the Anchor app, and hopefully I'll be able to incorporate that into my podcast. Thank you so much for listening once again, and goodbye for now.